Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in net time.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. I'm Josh Parcell, as always, joined by Rossi Three Stacks. It is time to preview week five. We're back, 1 week hiatus. When Ross goes on vacation, the whole show goes on vacation. But we're back from... Well, I shouldn't say we're back. You're back, Ross, from was a little Nag's Head for a week, a little Charleston. You had a little nice weekend down there in the low country.
I had quite a getaway. Yeah, man, just given, like everybody else, I feel like this year had vacation plans kind of shifted around. So did my family beach trip to Nag's Head, annual tradition. It was lovely down there. And then immediately drove from Nag's Head to Charleston. Spend some time with the in-laws. Great time, feeling refreshed. It was the most unplugged I think I have ever been from the world over the course of a whole week and a half. So didn't do a ton, but it was great, man. I'm back and refreshed, and I'm ready for a big weekend of college football.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you and I talk just about daily for the last 10 years, and yep. I feel like this is the least I've talked to you in 10 years. You were detached from the world. If it wasn't debate talk or the occasional UNC Mac Brown Virginia Tech update, I don't know that I even know what the hell you've been up to.
I know, man. No, it was by design. I really wanted to unplug, as they say. And so that really was it. I got on my phone for like 15 minutes to debrief post debate the next day with some friends who were asking like good, honest questions about what I thought. And yeah, read a couple Tech and UNC stories, and that was pretty much it, man. I was off. And a lot of time in the car. People forget this. It is further from Nag's Head, North Carolina, to Charleston, South Carolina, than it is from Richmond, Virginia, to Charleston, South Carolina.
Is that true? Wow.
It is true.
How? Yeah, by how much?
Like 30 minutes.
Wow.
But still.
Yeah.
You got to drive all the way back from the Outer Banks, just like across the state to catch up with 95, and you would get there faster, at least from like where I live in Richmond, you'd get there faster coming that way. It was crazy. It was a very long drive. When we planned it, we're like, oh yeah, we'll just continue on down to Charleston, just one more state down the beach. But like, oh no, it is a full 7 hours.
Yeah, it does not work like that. North Carolina, mm-mm. Sneaky wide, sneaky thick state.
Yeah, low-key from Manio to Murphy, man. It's crazy wide.
It is wild. Well, we're glad you're back. We're going to have a lot to get into today. This is, you know, we'll spend some time kind of recapping what's happened the last couple of weeks, but this is the best weekend of the season yet. It really feels like we're kicking it into high gear this weekend. Two big showdowns in the ACC. SEC's got a bunch of good games, too. And hey, Big Ten football is only a couple weeks away, so we're getting closer to feeling like it is full on college football. There's only been, I want to say, one game that's actually been postponed this weekend. The Louisiana game got moved; it's going to be next Wednesday. But other than that, kind of all systems go. This is encouraging.
Yeah.
It's been a good week. I know the NFL's had problems, but college football seems to be running pretty smoothly right now, which is exciting. So let's dive right in, Ross, to what we've missed. Let's catch everybody up after it's been a couple of weeks. Kyle Trask, to me, is quickly becoming the early season darling Heisman front runner. Because of a couple of huge weeks. He's got 10 touchdowns already this season, only the one pick. They've won back-to-back weeks. Neither team that they played was all that tough. You played South Carolina last week. You had Ole Miss in the first week. they will be tested more so this week against Texas A&M. They obviously have Georgia coming up in about a month. So there are some big games on the horizon for him. But there is a lot of people have started to point this out, there is an LSU 2019 feel to what Florida is doing right now. Because last year, LSU, offense hit the ground running. Joe Burrow was dynamite. LSU's offense was scoring 35, 40, 50 points. And the defense wasn't quite up to speed until really the later part of the season. And a lot of that for LSU was health. I mean, Grant Delpit was banged up. They had a couple of other guys that they were trying to get right. And then once they got healthy, it felt like they finally were clicking on all cylinders. Florida's healthy. Florida's just struggling right now on defense. But if we just talk about Kyle Trask, Ross, despite being unplugged, I'm going to throw you out there and just tell me what you've seen of Trask. Have you had a chance to see any of what the guy is doing? What do you think about Trask right now? Because it feels like he's that America's darling early Heisman front runner.
Yeah, so I have seen not a ton. However, on the aforementioned long drive to Charleston, I listened to the entirety of the Florida-South Carolina game in the car. Caught it all on the Gamecocks radio network. And it sure sounded like Kyle Trask was lighting it up. Kyle Pitts also.
Yeah.
I think I texted you during that he is averaging like 2 touchdowns per half, or at least through the first half of the game against South Carolina. He was averaging 2 touchdowns per half.
That's also a touchdown per quarter.
One could say that.
I'm not a mathematician, but 2 touchdowns What sounds more impressive? 2 touchdowns a half or 1 touchdown a quarter? I feel like 1 touchdown a quarter sounds better. Am I crazy?
I think it does too. Yeah, that's interesting. You're right, but it absolutely does. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, he's scoring more frequently that way. Anyway, regardless, Kyle Trask is playing really, really well. The Gamecocks radio announcers were not pleased with the officiating in that game.
Ooh.
Hilarious. This guy was unbelievable. Exactly what I would want out of my school's play-by-play guy. I guess Trask like overthrew a ball some point in the game. They called it pass interference, and this guy was just, that is a horrible call. And then kind of chuckled and goes, welcome to Gainesville, I guess. Like, just exactly the homerism I would want listening to this game as I'm driving through South Carolina. So aside from that, assuming he keeps getting the calls like that, I got to think he's the Heisman frontrunner. But no, he's up to third in the odds, or maybe he already was there.
Yeah.
I love the LSU comparison early on, though, because they weren't great defensively either until later in the year. And even then, I guess they're never great, but they turned it on. So it's not a terrible comp. I like that a lot. Obviously, I think we have to see what happens with Justin Fields when he gets back, and Lawrence is going to have some opportunities for signature moments, and he might get the lifetime achievement Heisman. But Trask is right there, man. He's got as good of a chance as anybody right now.
Before the season, he was 30-1 to win the Heisman, which was on par with Bo Nix, which was on par with Sam Howell, which was behind Miles Brennan, which seems hilarious now.
Crazy, yeah.
And if you... if anyone was reading what I wrote back in, gosh, this would have been, I guess, June. I'm pulling it up right now. I wrote something earlier this summer just on who the best bets are, not who I think's necessarily going to win, but if you're trying to bet value. And by the way, betting the Heisman is the dumbest bet you can make. Like, betting teasers is a smarter bet than trying to actually bet on the Heisman. It's a sucker bet.
Yeah.
But I did think that Kyle Trask was as good of a value as you were going to get at that 30-1. And I wrote about it. This is back in June. I said Kyle Pitts is the best tight end in the country. Now, the schedule's changed since I wrote this. But, you know, they have obviously a bunch of big games on the schedule. And they're the perfect team that's in that sweet spot. You and I talked about this before the season. Now, we were talking about Sam Ellinger as a guy we like, too, for a lot of the same reasons. Big-time program, but not... they're not Alabama or Clemson where they're expected to go out and win every single week. Like, everybody, if they win, it's that all that's what was supposed to happen. So it's the perfect combination of really good team, but not so good that winning a big game isn't just matter of fact for them.
Sure.
And I think that's where Kyle Trask is right now. But I'm excited to see what he does against Georgia. And
I know
we're following the dogs. Georgia did. I really wish we had done a podcast last week, because I would have been so adamant. I would have been all over Georgia against Auburn last weekend. So many people seem to be hopping on the Auburn bandwagon because they beat Kentucky, and Georgia looked sloppy through 2.5 quarters against Arkansas, which is all fair. But I think people were way too quick to dismiss Georgia, who has so much talent on both sides. And once they figured out that Stetson Bennett just needs to be the quarterback, they were fine. And last week you saw them, I mean, ran the ball all over Auburn, and the defense looks as elite as we thought. So that matchup with Florida is going to be exciting. I think we both like Georgia over Florida at the beginning of the season. I know Florida's offense looks good. What do you think, Florida-Georgia-wise, right now, gun to your head, who's the better team in the division?
Yeah, I'm still rolling with Georgia,
but
it is closer than I thought. I don't think I remotely appreciated how good this Florida offense was going to be. But ultimately, I think Georgia's defense will be able to neutralize them whenever this game actually happens. I like Georgia still, but it is a much smaller margin than I thought a couple weeks ago.
I think it could get very interesting if in a couple of weeks Georgia loses a close one to Alabama, then beats Florida. So you could end up with Georgia and Florida both at 9-1 at the end of the year. Georgia gets into the SEC championship game because they beat Florida head to head. So Florida's sitting at home 9-1, not playing in the SEC championship game. You would have to think they're going to be ranked in the top six at that point with 9 wins.
Right.
And let's say Alabama's undefeated. Now let's say Georgia beats Alabama in the rematch in the SEC championship game. So you would have a 10-1 Alabama, you would have a 10-1 Georgia, and a 9-1 Florida. You mean to tell me that one of those three teams isn't making the playoff? I asked Andy Staples about this on my radio show today, and he said there's no chance. He said there is no way that three SEC teams are getting in, because he thinks the ACC champion has a seat at the table, unless that something so bizarre happens, like somehow a 7-3 team wins the conference, which doesn't seem likely. So he thinks the ACC is going to have a seat at the table, likely Clemson, but could be someone else. And he thinks Ohio State's going to cruise in. But if something gets a little sideways in one of those conferences, like imagine if, I mean, I guess I hear him, but let's say the ACC runner-up is 8-2, or I guess 9-2 because they play 11 games. They have two losses, and they beat Clemson. So you have this huge win over Clemson, but like it's a 9-2, I don't know, North Carolina, that maybe they lost to Notre Dame, and maybe they lost to UVA, or they have, you know, something like that. I just think it could get really hairy if there are those three SEC teams sitting there all with one loss. There will be a mutiny in whichever one of those cities doesn't get in. I am actively rooting for that to happen. I want Alabama to knock off Georgia now, Georgia beat Florida, and then Georgia get Alabama in the rematch. That seems very much in play.
I was gonna say it's not really that chaotic of a scenario. I mean, it would cause chaos, but maybe even the most likely, not the most likely, but it's as likely as any scenario to play out. That'd be awesome. I'm like you. I will be rooting for all of the controversy, mostly because I want 18 playoff, and so I want as many wonky things as possible to happen every year until we get a chance to, you know, rewrite the rules to this thing and make it clear to everybody that, given the current structure of college football, which might change anyway here soon, four teams makes no sense, and this would be a real chance that this is a year that will prove that.
Well, and two, if there was ever a year for them to make the exception and go to 8, this was the year.
Yeah, try it out.
I mean, because if you do it any other year, you can't go back, right? Like you expand it to eight, it's you've expanded. There's yep. no going back to four once you've gone to eight. But you could at least do it in a year like this and say, well, it's a different season and you know there's no non-conference games yeah. and it's harder for us to judge one team versus another in a different league. So we're going to give, you know, we're going to expand the field. We're going to give more teams an opportunity. And then if it works and it's a great product, which it will be, then great. But if sure. it doesn't, then you can go back next year and say, well, it was a special circumstance. We're going to go back to four. We'll reevaluate down the road. It just felt like that was such an easy opportunity.
Easy.
And we're probably going to run into some weird situation. That's just one possible outcome. But
yep.
we all know that, I mean, first of all, the season's going to get weird anyway. It's already starting to. And if they're, you know, Ohio State loses a game, but, you know, they feel like they deserve to be in at the end of the season or whatever. The Pac-12 has an undefeated team, but they don't get in because they only played seven games. There's going to be controversy. It feels like they could have avoided a lot of that by going to eight. But I just can't wait. I hope that is my dream is for just the Paul Feinbaum show to erupt when there are three one-loss teams fighting to get into that playoff. And if there was ever a time to get it to expand, have three teams and leave one or two of them out from the most powerful conference in the country. Let's dive in quickly to another question that we've talked about a couple of times on the show, but I feel even more strongly about now than I have before. And that is that Alabama is the best team in the country. And I'm very frustrated that more people don't listen to this podcast because before the season, Ross, there were two voters out of, I want to say close to 70, might actually be more, two voters in the AP voted Alabama number one. And you remember on the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the year, I said, Alabama's the best team. I said people are sleeping on Mac Jones. They're thinking that because Tua yep. is gone, that out the, it, yep. it was the conversation all offseason was Clemson and Ohio State are 1A, 1B because of the quarterbacks, and Alabama was a great team, but they were third. And I never saw it that way. And now, second Andy Staples reference in the show, he comes on the show today. Love Andy. But I talked to him and I asked him who the best team is, and he goes, oh, it's Alabama. They're more complete than Clemson. They're better. You know, offensive line is great. Defense is a little bit better at this point. Mac Jones is playing well. And nothing against Andy, but I'm just thinking to myself, where was this energy a month ago? I tried to tell people then Alabama is loaded, and they've looked apart the first couple weeks. I mean, they slaughtered Missouri. That game could have been a lot worse. They called off the dogs in the third quarter. And then against Texas A&M, they looked bored throughout much of that game, and they win comfortably in that yep. one. So Alabama, to me, is just top to bottom the best team. And Clemson, speaking of being bored, absolutely was in no way challenged or threatened by Virginia. But they let Brandon Armstrong do a couple nice things. He ran the ball pretty well, threw the ball for a couple, hit a couple big plays, second half of that game. So I'm cautiously in on Alabama better than Clemson. I'm not going to just write off the Tigers. But at this point, it's funny to me how 3 weeks into the season, now all of a sudden everybody realizes that Alabama is maybe better now than they've been in the last 5 or 6 years, which is scary.
Yeah, it really is crazy. I watched a tiny bit of the Alabama A&M game. I think, you know, we talked a lot about Mac Jones earlier this year, and we were comparing him to the Alabama quarterbacks of yesteryear, of pre-Tua, pre-Jalen Hurts, I guess. But that offense looks every bit as explosive as it did before, especially, I mean, God, those wide receivers are crazy. Najee Harris is incredible. But Mac Jones is kind of the real deal. So yeah, you're right. They are certainly 1A or 1B in the country. And at least without Ohio State playing is probably 1A, 1B, 1C. I can't tell you too much about Clemson yet until this weekend.
Yep.
Because we have seen nothing from them.
Yep.
I mean, they started kind of slow last year, and then every single year they're playing awesome football by yep. the end of the year.
Yep.
So Clemson, of course, is still there. And I don't think that's your point, that they're not. but we just don't know. Alabama beat a pretty good, maybe very good A&M team. We don't know. Clemson has not been challenged at all. So we'll get a first glimpse of them against a good Miami team this weekend.
And the thing that Dabo does really well, kind of to your point, is he plays everybody, which not everybody does. I mean, Urban Meyer didn't really do that at Ohio State. Saban doesn't even do that really at Alabama. I think he's starting to do a little more of this, but Dabo pulls his starters early or even just rotates in younger guys earlier in the game and gives them meaningful snaps. I mean, the freshmen on Clemson right now are absolutely outrageous. I mean, just on the defensive line alone, the guys that they've got back there, like Brise, the number one recruit in the country, you know, they've got freshmen making an impact. Trenton Simpson is excellent, the freshman linebacker. Miles Murphy. I mean, they got a lot of young guys that are all going to get rapidly better. And Clemson, by the end of the season, will look exactly like the team we thought they were going to be. And they might look like it this weekend. I mean, we'll talk about that game coming up. But I just think at the very least, Alabama and Clemson are level. I don't understand why at the beginning of the year it felt like it was Clemson and Ohio State 1A, 1B, and then Alabama still great, but not in that same conversation quite to the same extent. And it was the quarterbacks. It was no other reason but that. And Alabama's good everywhere else. Can I workshop a take really quickly? Can I workshop a tape on the air? Okay. So Mac Jones is dealing right now, as we said. I mean, has lit up Missouri. He lit up Texas A&M. Nobody really expected this from him. But now that we're seeing him throw for 350 yards a game, he's hitting bombs left and right. He's got Jalen Waddle. He's got Devontae Smith. Even John Metchie looks good. Before Tua started at Alabama, Alabama's offense was not nearly as wide open as it had been. They started to open things up, run a little bit more spread. Jalen Hurts wins SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Then the next year is when Tua really takes off. But you've seen a few other quarterbacks at blue blood schools put up ridiculous numbers lately as these teams have started to evolve. LSU did it last season. Joe Burrow, for the first time ever, LSU modernized their offense, and the numbers reflected it and actually topped what Tua's numbers were. So there's that aspect of, you know, like Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, some other quarterbacks having ridiculous numbers or just making it look easy when they're surrounded by that kind of talent. But then also seeing Mac Jones do this, It kind of makes me a little less confident that Tua's the real deal in the NFL, or at least to the degree that he was touted to be going in. Because it was all tank for Tua, right? I mean, prior to the injury, Tua was going to be the number one pick. It probably would have been a fun discussion between him and Burrow if Tua had been healthy. It ended up obviously being Burrow because of the injury. But I worry a little bit that maybe Tua, who's still a great player, is getting more of the benefit of the doubt because he did things at Alabama we had never seen before, and he was playing with such incredible talent, incredible wideouts,
right,
that Alabama's had Amari Cooper, they've had Julio Jones, not like they haven't had guys, but the depth of talent that they've had and the style of play, I think it took our breath away being like, holy cow, this is an Alabama quarterback breaking all these records.
Alabama can score?
Right. And I think Tua's the numbers speak for themselves. They were great. But now we're seeing Mac Jones. It's early. That's why I'm workshopping the take. I need to see him against, like, if he does this against Georgia in a couple weeks, it's different. But I'm starting to think maybe Tua's better than Mac Jones, but did we fall in love with Tua too much because of the talent and the guys that he had around him? I've got my eye on it.
Do you know what take you just gave?
What?
You just gave Tom Brady as a system quarterback because Matt Castle and Jimmy G also played well in that system. That's the take you just gave.
I guess that's true.
How does that make you feel as a Tom Brady stan?
I know. It's true, and for all we know, Tua may turn out to be great. I'm not trying to make the case that Tua is going to be a bust. It's just that I'm just a little...
Because
I already had this take a little bit last year when we saw Joe Burrow. It's like, okay, was Tua really that great? Or is it just that the teams that have always had the most talent and the best athletes are finally realizing that they can also air it out and spread the ball around.
Right.
And the numbers are reflecting that. Like, how good would, I don't know, A.J. McCarron's numbers have looked if Alabama had four first-round picks at wide receiver, you know, to throw to. And they actually ran an offense that supported it. Because, I mean, Judy, Ruggs, Smith, Waddle, like these, we're seeing how good Jalen Waddle is. He was the third wide receiver on that team last year. It's just something I've got my eye on. But I hear you. I know.
No, I'm giving you a hard time. No, you're right. I mean, it's Ken Dorsey with Miami and all those athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Dorsey goes way too high and is clearly not an NFL quarterback. At times have changed. I'm with you. I will also keep an eye on that take. Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on, though, because I know we got a lot more to talk about. Do you want to quickly talk about the Lane Train and the incredible story that Matt Leinart told today?
We can save it for maybe next week, but if you are listening, well, we got a lot to get to. But if you are listening, go listen to or you can just go on my Twitter page. I clipped the story. Or you can go listen to Ryan Russillo's podcast. He had Matt Leinart on his podcast, and Matt Leinart told the most insane story in the most casual way about Lane Kiffin and Lane's ex-wife and what they've been doing during quarantine. So go check that out. We don't have a time to get to that because we got so much else to get to. But go listen to Russillo's podcast because that was one of the best stories I've heard in a while on a pod. So let's look at, we're going to look at this weekend from a couple different angles. Let's first look at it from this, Ross. So there are three games, could kind of make a case for four, but three games with overwhelming favorites going up against blue blood or very proud programs in desperate need of a marquee win. Miami and Clemson, you have Texas A&M and Florida, and then you have Tennessee going on the road to Athens to take on Georgia. Of those three, which of those teams, Miami, Texas A&M, Tennessee, which of those three teams do you think would benefit the most from pulling off the upset this weekend?
Oh, who would benefit the most?
Or who needs it the most, however you want to call it, but we can look at it through different ways.
Yeah. All right, so who would benefit the most, I think, is Tennessee. I think Tennessee over Georgia would validate some of the rise and hype we've seen out of Tennessee here lately, the momentum. I think you know they've got the longest winning streak in the FBS right now. They haven't lost in a long time. Obviously, they also have not beat anybody. And last year, they got crushed by everybody good that they played. So I think at some point, Tennessee needs a win. Them getting a big win like that would add some fuel to a fire that is maybe starting to burn but could potentially get extinguished here pretty quickly.
So
now, Texas A&M, on the other hand, I think really needs this win.
Okay.
I think they are a little further along and where they are, and call it a rebuild or just call it this iteration of the program, whatever you want. They need the win. They're recruiting at a really high level, but they just have not won any big game. You can't point to anything really since Johnny Football. And I'm sure there have been wins since then, but nothing that immediately pops out.
Not really. Not really.
A signature. Yeah. So a signature A&M win, it's time. You know, if Miami loses to Clemson, like, honestly, no big deal. If Tennessee plays well and loses to Georgia, I don't think that's going to do that much to diminish the momentum they have going on there. You could honestly argue that they'll be encouraged by the fact that they're right there. But if A&M loses this weekend to Florida, like, this is one they need to win. I think that will just be a hit that Jimbo can't sustain, but it will be it's more of a must win for A&M than I think it is for either the other two.
This is a really, really tough topic because I feel like you could make a case for or against all of these teams.
Sure, right.
And because all that you said is pretty valid and I almost disagree with all of it, which is funny because I think the team that would benefit the most from winning this game this weekend is actually Miami. Here's why. If Miami does win, they have the inside track to the playoffs. If they win, you look at the rest of their schedule, they play Virginia Tech and they play North Carolina. They go on the road to play Virginia Tech, but the next few weeks it's Pitt, UVA, NC State. If they win this weekend, I mean, first of all, that says volumes about where they actually are as a program. I mean, that would be enormous for them. So you would think that they're better than we thought they were, even though some people seem to think they're still a top 10 team now. So they win this game. Miami getting to the playoff, I think, if it happens, would totally change the entire landscape of their program, the complexion of the program. Now, to be fair, they would probably have to go through Clemson twice. You have to imagine they beat them now. They're almost certainly going to have to play them again at the end of the season. You can't imagine Clemson loses another game, but you never know.
Right.
But either way, I mean, if Miami wins this game, they are at worst the number two team in America, I would have to think, going into the rankings next weekend. I don't know how the vote, I mean, because Florida's three now. I don't think Florida beating Texas A&M would be enough to keep them ahead of Miami if Miami does beat Clemson. Depends on how it looks. But if Miami wins this game, the schedule is there. For Tennessee, now, would Tennessee benefit from this game? Of course they would. But they also have to play Alabama in a couple weeks. And they also have A&M and Auburn and Florida. So Tennessee could win this game. I mean, we all remember a few years ago, Tennessee wins on the Hail Mary in Athens.
Right.
And the season devolved from there. And Butch Jones was on the hot seat by the end of the season. Tennessee's schedule is so tough. They have other opportunities to get a marquee signature win. And at the same time, if they do win, they also have opportunities where it could fizzle out and it could become a distant memory. So I actually think that Tennessee, I don't know that they would benefit the most, but I think they need the win the most. I agree with you on the thing about Miami. If Miami loses, okay. I think just being competitive would go a long way for them. Just showing that you could belong on the field, because a couple years ago when they played Clemson, Clemson wiped the floor with them. Wisconsin embarrassed them in the playoff, or not in the playoff, in the Orange Bowl. Miami needs to just hang with an elite team. All due respect to Virginia Tech and Notre Dame from a few years ago, neither one of them were elite. This is an elite opponent. So I think Miami could just benefit from being competitive. Tennessee needs it. I mean, Tennessee needs a win to feel like they're making progress with Pruitt because, as you mentioned, the wins they had last year, I know they have the longest winning streak in America. I mean, the best win in that stretch was probably a 4-point win over Kentucky. It's not as if they've gone up against the upper echelon of the conference and made a statement. They have punched down and won a bunch of games, which is good for them.
Right.
I mean, the last few years they were losing some of those games, but they're clearly turning a corner. This would mean a lot for them. Texas A&M, dude, that last year, they played five teams that were ranked in the top 10. And I just think there were a lot of teams that, good teams that would lose those games. Now, they were competitive in the Clemson game, sort of. They were down, I want to say, it was 24-3. They scored in the final second. So it's not like it was, you know, they were tooth and nail with them like they were 2 years ago. But, you know, Auburn, they lose by 8. Georgia hung around in that game, only lost by 6. They were blown out by Alabama and LSU. They are building. And I know that a win over Florida would go a long way, but it's the contract. It's $75 million, so people expect results immediately. And they're in the worst place, I think. They are in the absolute dead zone of the SEC where you're a really good team and you're just not as good as Alabama, LSU, Georgia. And if they're 15th, Bud Elliott from 247 Sports does the blue chip ratio, which is a great way to measure, you know, how talented a program is. They're 15th in the blue chip ratio. They're right behind USC. And they're 6th, though, in the SEC. 15th in the country, 6th in the SEC. They would be 2nd in the ACC. They'd be 3rd in the Pac-12. I actually think they'd be 3rd in the Big 12 if they were still in that conference behind Texas and Oklahoma. So it's just I do think this program eventually needs to have that win. They do have other opportunities, though, the rest of the season. It would be nice to win against Florida, but if they could win, you know, beat LSU, which seems winnable, beat Tennessee, winnable, I think Texas A&M could still finish 7-3, and that'd be a good year for them. But make no mistake about it, winning this game, I think, would just be a big sigh of relief for, I think you said that, I mean, for a program that is just aching for that win after they paid Jimbo all that money.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't, that's a very good point looking at the remaining games on each team's schedule. Candidly, I probably should have done that. That's really important context for it. It's a great point about Miami and just them having that much more to gain because of what else is left. Whereas the other teams both have opportunities for big wins again or losses that would, you know, crush some momentum. Miami, this is kind of it for them for a month. So, yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah, huge hurdle for Miami. But we'll talk more about that and by the boat coming up in a few minutes. All right, Ross, let's talk DraftKings and Craft King of the Week. My DraftKings, Tylan Wallace, Oklahoma State, 9 grabs, 148 yards, 2 TDs against Kansas. No Spencer Sanders. He's been out since the first game of the season. Oklahoma State, clearly now the class of the Big 12 for whatever that's worth. They're off this weekend. They got Baylor on the road. They got Iowa State the following week and Texas at home. They get through those three games. Only Oklahoma stands in their way of, I think, maybe an unbeaten season. I like Oklahoma State. They struggled with Tulsa a couple weeks ago, but Tulsa just knocked off UCF last week, so all of a sudden that win looks a little bit better. Look now, but the Cowpokes kind of making some noise. And in a Big 12 that looks pretty weak, I think the playoff chances are there for Oklahoma State. My Craft King, I'm going a bottle of Waddle. I'm going a bottle of Jalen Waddle. I think he blows up this weekend. Ole Miss, they're playing Alabama. Ole Miss has given up nearly 300-yard passing yards a game. We saw what Kyle Pitts did to him a few weeks ago. 72% completion, 9.5 yards per catch, 68th out of 74 teams on defense, giving them 9.5 yards per reception that they allow. This is a horrific pass defense. I think Ole Miss might score some points, maybe. And I also think even if they don't, after everything that Lane Kiffin has been saying this week about Nick Saban, calling him, what did he say? He said he's their dad. Apparently there's a group text with Lane Kiffin and Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt, and I think Jimbo might be in it, and they talk about Nick Saban as the dad, and he called out Saban the other day for being an old man and saying he couldn't beat Kiffin one-on-one. I think Saban, he's playing nice with the media. I kind of think Saban's going to try to pour it on Lane, and if he does, Jalen Waddle's going to get some points. So I'm picking Waddle to be the star of the week on DraftKings. He's my Craft King. A bottle of Waddle, that's what we're drinking this weekend.
I like that because then it leaves it up to dealer's choice also, whatever you want that bottle
that's
to
right.
be. That's well done. That is thinking, my friend. All right, my Draft King of the week was – this might surprise you, Josh, but Kenny Pickett from Pitt.
Whoa.
In a loss to NC State, had 411 yards passing and a touchdown, 40 yards rushing, and 2 rushing touchdowns. So I picked him – one, those are really good numbers. That's like close to 40 fantasy points. But two, I wanted to point out a couple things. One, it's another reminder that big-time stats like that do not actually equal winning football games. The lesson that we've all learned either the hard way or in an exciting way in fantasy football over the years. And two, Josh, how did Pitt only score 29 points with Kenny Pickett throwing for 400 yards and running for two scores? They didn't turn the ball over other than once on downs, and they got stuffed at the goal line. So I guess I looked it up. I didn't realize it. I was driving during this game. They kicked 3 field goals, 2 of which were under 30 yards. They got stuffed at the goal line on fourth down after a long 11-play, 78-yard drive. So their first 3 red zone trips, 6 total points,
yep.
And they end up losing by 1. That's how it happens. They outgained NC State by over 100 yards. So I just wanted to – I wanted to bring Kenny Pickett up really just so I could rant about those things because that is crazy. Those are just very odd stats to me. But honestly, what it reminds me of, and here's a segue for you, Josh, into my Craft King and then what we'll talk to next.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the 2018 Virginia Tech-North Carolina game where UNC ran the ball all up and down the field, kept stalling out in the red zone and kicking or missing field goals. Tech got in the red zone like 3 times and scored every single time.
Yeah.
And won. It felt a lot like that.
Yeah. It's a great point. And I wish that we had had that pod again. There are two reasons why I wanted a pod last week. One was I was all over Georgia. And full transparency, I might have been the only guy in America, but I was all about NC State going into last week. And, I mean, like you said, Pitt outplayed them. But I did think NC State would cover. NC State legit looked competent once they actually went to Devin Leary in Blacksburg in week one, or their opener, right?
Yeah,
so the offense moved the ball. So I felt like there was they'd found something. And Pitt beat Louisville, and that was fine, but Louisville has all sorts of issues. I feel like Louisville almost beat themselves a little bit in that game. And it feels like this is a broken record every week. Do not think Pitt is that great of a football team. Kenny Pickett looked nice. I get it. He had a good game. You know, Turner had 180-some yards. Max, a nice player, whatever. I just don't find Pitt to be that impressive to me. They don't have a guy on the team that I feel like he's going to win the game for you. Every other team in the ACC that we talk about as a contender has a guy that you're like, that dude is an alpha. That dude can win. Khalil Herbert did it for Virginia Tech last week. Sam Howell, we obviously know at North Carolina, he's not the only one, but that offense has explosive players. Derek King at Miami, Cunningham at Louisville, everybody at Clemson. Pitt doesn't have that. And in NC State, I like their chances to hang around in that game. And lo and behold, what a heck of a drive by NC State at the end of that game to win. Thrilling game. So, I wasn't shocked at all that NC State won that game. And I don't think that Pitt deserves a lot of the credit that was coming their way. People talked about them in the same breath as those teams I just mentioned. I didn't see it. So we'll see how they respond. But I'm with you. I was impressed with NC State. But, you know, how Pitt was managed to lose that game with all the offense that they had. Penalties were a big thing, too. They had 125 yards in penalties, which crushed them. Got your Kraft King, though. Tech UNC, right?
Yeah, so my Kraft King this weekend is the Dirt Nap IPA from my local brewery here in Richmond, the Vale. 12 p.m. to, I guess, 3:30, maybe 5:30 if the game goes six overtimes again. This weekend, it's my least favorite block of time of the entire calendar year whenever Tech and UNC play. as a fan with dual fanhood, it is like watching my mom and dad argue on television for 3 or 4 hours. I just want the game to be over as quickly as it possibly can, and yet of course every year it comes down to the wire. Well, at least the last 2 years it's come down to the wire, gone to overtime, six overtimes last year. So I might just have to wake up, drink a couple of these 8.8% Dirt Nap IPAs,
heavy.
Take an actual dirt nap for a few hours, and just wake up in time for the Georgia game. Because I hate this game.
Last year was about as bad as it could get for you.
I'm sure I was texting you, like, just put me out of my misery. Somebody just make a field goal and make it stop. I don't care if one of you makes it, just do it.
Man, they dragged that one out last year. Six OTs, Mac Brown icing his own kicker.
I'm already stressed. Let's go ahead and talk about it because we're here. I'm already stressed about this game. Virginia Tech at UNC, noon on Saturday. Tar Heels right now, I believe, are a 5-point favorite. I think that's doing. We'll talk about the gambling side in a second. Josh, I want to talk to you. I think you're a very good person to have this discussion with. You are one of the voices, the unofficial voices of the Virginia Tech fan base, I would say, certainly on Twitter. You've loved the program forever. You also grew up a North Carolina basketball fan, and I don't think historically have hated North Carolina athletics.
No.
Why has this become such a heated rivalry where both fan bases seem to really hate each other over the last couple of years? And it, my take, and I'll shut up and let you.
No, by all means.
It seems like it started in 2015 with Beamer's last home game. Carolina wins. They clinched the Coastal Division in Blacksburg on a questionable catch, no catch in corner of the end zone. It really started bubbling up in 2016 in the Hurricane game.
Yes.
Where Tech goes down to Chapel Hill, blows North Carolina out in the midst of rain and wind. And a lot of Carolina fans, I think, then were saying this game has an asterisk. It doesn't really count because the conditions were so sloppy. And I think that irked a lot of Tech fans.
Yes.
I think that is where it really started going from like, okay, this is a competitive rivalry to these fan bases don't like each other. And Fuente runs up the score in 2017. And then the last 2 years, North Carolina somehow manages to grab defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yep.
Or vice versa, depending on the perspective you're looking at. But really, certainly in 2018, they fumble at the goal line and let Ryan Willis go 95 yards or whatever it was. Last year, of course, six overtimes. But it, what has once, for me, again, as a dual fanhood, went to Virginia Tech, but have my whole life have been a diehard North Carolina fan. It's always been, or at least since I got to Tech, it was a very easy rivalry for me to manage. People kind of didn't really care about the other, and Carolina was the basketball school. They kind of stayed in their lane. They beat Tech once in football our sophomore year on a Thursday night.
Yep.
And the Ryan Williams fumble at the end of the game.
Yep.
Tech, I think, beat North Carolina in basketball once while we were there in 2010, maybe one other time. But otherwise, it was kind of like everybody's coexisted. And so for me, I appreciated that because now the last 5 years have really been horrible. Because all my friends from college, I just sit there expressionless during these games. Like I said, I just want it to end. Whereas previously, I could watch it normally. And, you know, what I traditionally have done is just root and still do. I root for whichever team needs it more. And that tends to be pretty clear because Carolina will have a bad football team that year. And like Tech clearly, you know, needs the win because they're still in the Coastal Division race or, you know, vice versa every once in a while, but certainly in basketball, be like, well, Carolina's rooting, you know, trying to win the ACC or Tech's on the bubble. One of those things. A year like this though, and really last year too, where both teams are vying for that number two spot. This is, I think, kind of a de facto elimination game. Maybe not. You could argue not, but one of them is going to have a serious leg up yep. when it comes to the number two seed in the ACC. So it's a huge game.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot going on. And this, what was once a two teams kind of kept to their respective, stayed in their lanes, has now become this intertwined, really hated rivalry. And I don't like it, Josh. I just want mom and dad to get along.
It's like a root canal every year. When you watch these two
Horrible.
Teams go,
Horrible.
I know. You pretty much summed it up. I mean, you're on
okay.
it. I mean, that has a lot to do with it. I think the game in the Hurricane in 2016 absolutely was the catalyst for all of this.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, Carolina fans felt as if the game was not, you know, it wasn't a legit win, which is stupid. Both teams played in the same conditions. Virginia Tech came out and just dominated them. The one thing that you didn't mention that I think is huge here is the VT to NC or NC to VT hashtag where Fuente and the Hokies early on in Fuente's tenure tried really, really hard and somewhat successfully to recruit North
successful.
Carolina. Right. I mean, think about it. Hendon Hooker, Trey Turner. There's a handful of guys.
Dax Hollifield.
Yeah, Dax Hollifield. Out of the state. They went into Carolina and had success. And that, in part, helped contribute to Larry Fedora's demise. I mean, he dug his own grave in the state. But that aspect of it played a role. And then now, like you said, Fuente ran it up. I think those two things are related. Ran it up on North Carolina
Definitely.
In 2017. And then, you know, the Matt comes in last year and reclaims the state. Virginia Tech struggled to recruit, all that. And I do think that there is that animosity between two schools trying to battle over the same turf. And North Carolina's coming into Virginia even, I believe, and having some success too. So there's that.
You're right. No, the recruiting element, I think, is a big piece. And that's where, especially, you know, that's a year-round thing. The game happens once a year. And fans are upset for, you know, a day or a week or a month in the case of the Hurricane game maybe. But the recruiting is all year, and I think that has just made it bubble up. That's a great point. I kind of forgot about the NC2VT thing as a factor, and you're exactly right. It's now starting to go the other way. I mean, North Carolina goes in and gets Tony Grimes out of Virginia Beach.
Yep.
He might be playing a little bit more this weekend if some guys are as injured as they maybe seem to be for North Carolina. You've gotten a couple other guys here, and Dre Bly being back and really talking about calling everybody home team. So you're right. I think it has just been, like I said, they all both kind of stayed in their lanes, and a combination of a couple of controversial games and then the recruiting turf war. I think that's spot on. So you're, yes. Okay. We're on the same page there. I think deep down I knew I needed to talk it out because I hate that it's become this rivalry.
No, I get it. And I'll say this too. I'm not afraid to say this. Virginia Tech is scared of North Carolina, flat out, because Virginia Tech has, I mean, look, the last decade, not really withstanding, but Virginia Tech has A, dominated the Coastal for a while, not in lately,
yep.
But even when they didn't dominate the Coastal, they still had their way most of the time with North Carolina.
They've dominated them since they got into the ACC.
Virginia Tech has come into the ACC, and they have staked claim to football. This is our thing. Basketball is your right. thing. Football is our thing. And they know North Carolina has better facilities, more money than Virginia Tech. They just don't have the interest. Well, now all of a sudden, you have Mack Brown come in, who's doing a lot of the things that if Virginia Tech fans were being honest, want from their program and aren't getting, which is just an excitement, a really enthusiastic coaching staff, obviously a head coach who puts the program on the map. Virginia Tech forever, even with Frank Beamer, was very out of sight, out of mind. They were always overlooked nationally. I mean, with the rare exception of a Michael Vick year and stuff, but even when Virginia Tech sure. was at their best, they were never viewed like Clemson is now, for example. And there's a lot of reasons
right.
for that. But the point is, Virginia Tech feels like Virginia Tech fans, I think, view themselves as a tier higher than they actually are in the hierarchy of college football.
Yeah, it's weird. They I agree with that. But at the same time, the culture of the program is kind of this, like, blue-collar, tough, like, we want the
That's what it was built on.
Working under – that's what it's built on, for sure.
Yeah.
North Carolina, and especially with Mack Brown coming back with the hype, is kind of the antithesis of that.
Exactly. That's where, like, I was going. Exactly.
Sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, go ahead. No, I mean, you're right. Go on.
They're bringing in these 4- and 5-star recruits now.
Yep.
And they're putting out these, you know, cool hype videos. And they got all the Jordan swag that everybody could want. And Mack is, you know, very forthcoming that he wants them to be the cool place to go. And that is the opposite of what the Virginia Tech football program was built on. And I think, like, the fan base, you know, being in Southwest Virginia, off the beaten path, like, embraces that culture. And North Carolina, everything down, like, truly, again, everything down to the Jordan brand uniforms just is a little flashier.
Yep.
And I think there's a substance versus style element to this that always makes for a really interesting rivalry. And I think that segues a little nicely into this game, I think.
Yeah.
Because we've got, what, number 8 versus 18. North Carolina's number 8. Virginia Tech's number 18, I believe. Maybe is Tech higher than that coming into the game?
I think Tech is actually 19. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Number 8 versus number 19. Based on what you have seen from both teams this year, disregard recruiting rankings and offseason hype.
Yep.
I test this year only. Don't you think those rankings should be flipped?
Yeah, I don't know that I think Tech's a top 10 team the way they've played, but I think Virginia Tech is certainly, if you're asking me which team has played better, it's Virginia Tech.
Well, you don't think, without the Big Ten and the Pac-12 yet, do you not think Tech has been one of the 10 most impressive teams in the country?
Hmm. I'd have to think about it. It's close.
It's close.
The point that you're making that Virginia Tech is somewhat noticeably better than North Carolina just in terms of the way they played the first 2 weeks is spot on. Virginia Tech has played better football given the circumstances, no question, than North Carolina.
Yep. Yeah. So that's, and I think that leads up to just this being another really interesting, compelling game where, and it's everything about this whole year, but even this game. I mean, look, Carolina's going to have, I think, a little over 3,000 fans in attendance. So who knows what that's going to look or sound like. I mean, last year was, I guess, in Lane Stadium, of course, but 2 years ago was one of, you know, 2 years ago, one of the better home crowds Carolina had had in a while, night game. Chapel Hill, again, this is a rivalry game, but you're not going to have that big time atmosphere there. So it's just going to have a weird feel to it again. We don't know what Tech's roster is going to look like. They've, to your point, have had a lot of issues with COVID and had so many guys out. Like, basically the entire secondary last week was out. They managed to win. North Carolina has been very fortunate on the COVID front, but they had three or four really significant players go down in the second half of the Boston College game, and we have no idea if they're going to be out. if you want a fun read, head on over to InsideCarolina.com and listen to the fellas try to break down the practice video that was released today. These guys are going frame by frame trying to figure out. I think I see Storm Duck right there. That right there, I think that's 51. I think that's him. And then they're looking at, like, the foliage and the trees in the background, trying to determine if it's an old video or not.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. That is amazing.
It is. I just don't fully know what to think about this game. I think I would have it basically as a pick 'em game. I think the value for sure in the line is on Virginia Tech +5, the way they run the ball. Like I said, North Carolina's best defensive lineman, Ravo Hasek, I think is questionable at best for the weekend. He's been a force on the inside and a reason that North Carolina, shout out Jay Bateman, despite the one really bad offense they played in Boston College, we're not totally sure yet. North Carolina is number one in the country right now in yards per play defensively.
Which is wild.
From where this, I think before the season, if you'd said, yeah, they're number one in the country in yards per play offensively, that wouldn't really surprise anybody. But what's happened is the offense has kind of sputtered out of the gates. Teams have figured out Sam Howell a little bit. He'll adjust, but he's going through a Trevor Lawrence-esque sophomore slump to start the year.
Yeah.
Where teams are now like, saying, okay, this kid is elite at throwing the deep ball, so we're going to take that away and make him beat us underneath. And what's happening is he's not going through his progressions very quickly. He's holding on to the ball. Defenses are blitzing him and teeing off on him a little bit. Boston College got to him a lot. Forced an interception off of a throw where he was hit as he was throwing. Forced another fumble that could have been disastrous for UNC, but Javonte Williams made a big-time hustle play to recover it. So Sam Howell's got to adjust because people kind of have had a whole year to scout him now. So North Carolina's offense, not as good as we thought thus far, still very talented. Their defense, way better. Virginia Tech's offense, especially the running game, best in the country, the running game. I mean, they've been outrageous. Khalil Herbert is putting up absolutely crazy stats. Mm-hmm. So you called this, you know, a month ago. Virginia Tech's offense is way better than they're getting credit for. We both actually called these things.
Sure.
You said Tech's offense was better than expected. I said North Carolina's defense was better than expected. So it's just this, all these elements – Josh, I'm just talking it all out right now because I keep coming back to this is probably going to be another six overtime game, and I hate it.
So I'm probably going to make you feel good, at least the North Carolina fan in you feel good. I like North Carolina in the game. Maybe I'm reverse jinxing myself. Maybe I'm just trying to – because I can't remember the last time I picked Virginia Tech in a big game and they actually followed through and won, so maybe there's a little bit of that happening here, but –
Well,
realistically, I think North Carolina is the better side for a couple of reasons. While there are injuries for Carolina on the defensive side, secondary could be an issue, the amount of unknowns with Virginia Tech going into this game, it's too much for me to feel comfortable picking them to win. I don't know what the quarterback situation is. Is Hendon Hooker going to start? Braxton Burmeister... If you look at the box score, it looks like Burmeister was awful, and he wasn't good. But the play calling in the game last week for Virginia Tech was suspect through the first two and a half quarters. They ran a lot of vertical, fade route, one-on-one stuff with Burmeister, which was just very weird to me because Braxton's a pretty accurate thrower of the ball. I don't know why they didn't try to get the ball out of his hands quickly, let the receivers make plays in space, guys like Blackshear, guys like Trey Turner. Instead, they were running the offense they ran, you know, 4 years ago with Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips and Bucky Hodges, where they were just throwing deep balls all game. And it worked, but it wasn't working on Saturday, and it wasn't until late in the third quarter they realized, all right, let's hand it off to Herbert, and lo and behold, he, you know, pulls off
right.
I think it was over 100 yards just in the last quarter and a half alone. So that if Burmeister goes, I would hope that the Virginia Tech alters the game plan a little bit. But if Hooker goes, he missed 2 weeks of practice. He hasn't played a snap yet this season. So getting him his first action against North Carolina isn't ideal, and I just – there's that aspect of it. Plus, I'm not an expert on contact tracing, Ross, but if it's a two-week quarantine and Virginia Tech secondary played against NC State and they didn't play last week, I would have to think that either A, they're going to be coming off no practice for 2 weeks, you know, Tech's top corners, or they're still going to be in isolation. They're not going to be able to go. And if that's the case, then, I mean, I hear you on Sam Howell, and he struggled a little bit and whatever, but the only chance Virginia Tech has is if that defensive line, which is doing a great job at pressuring the quarterback, Justice sure. Reed and Belmar and Barmo, like they've been really, really good. I think they lead the nation in sacks per game right now. If they don't get to Sam Howell a lot and force multiple turnovers, I think North Carolina scores enough to win this game. I actually would dabble in the under, though, on this number. It's 59.5, which is a lot, and I think Virginia Tech's secret to this game, or not their secret, but the key to this game to win is ball control. I think they're going to have to run the ball a lot and keep it out of North Carolina's hands. It's going to rain, and supposedly there is rain in the forecast, which everyone's, you know, cue up the hurricane jokes or whatever. I do think that sloppy game, ground control, and both teams like to run the ball. I think that.
Sure.
I think you could see fewer possessions, slightly lower scoring. I like North Carolina 27-17 type thing. I'm not betting it. I'm staying away. I'm like you. It's already stressful enough to watch this game. But if I had to, I don't love the number. I mean North Carolina getting that many points is tough. But I do think North Carolina is the more I'm more confident in them, even if they haven't looked great to this point. But it's gonna be a wild one.
It is, and it's. I mean, what you said about, you know, Tech kind of disappointing you in big moments, and you're not really rising to the occasion. That is the exact sentiment that North Carolina fans have right now. Like nobody thinks they're gonna win because they're like, this is a huge game, and when has Carolina ever won like the big game? I mean, dating back to Mack Brown 1.0, and they had they called Judgment Day against Florida State, where both teams were undefeated, and they just laid an egg. I mean, that's what it is. But it would be a big win for either program. I joke about hating the game. I don't joke. I hate it. I actually am excited to watch it because I'm interested, obviously, in both programs. So just get me to 3:30 Saturday, and we can watch some of these other games.
Well, speaking of those other games, let's run through our by the boat picks quickly here. I'll start LSU, Missouri. That game is a noon kick on the SEC alternate channel, which that was the same channel we nearly had Upset City Week 1, Vandy, Texas A&M, when nobody could watch it. But you do get Missouri LSU here. LSU laying 13.5. I'm going to take LSU. I think Missouri is downright awful, and the schedule isn't doing them any favors. They played Alabama earlier to open the season, and then in week two get smoked by Tennessee. I think LSU, their loss to Mississippi State was a perfect storm. I picked that game. I did pick Mississippi State to cover the spread. I didn't think they'd win, but I thought that was a perfect storm for LSU. I think people are they're jumping off the LSU bandwagon a little too quickly. They lost a lot of talent. But I think that team is going to have a steep learning curve. They're going to get better quickly. And you saw them bounce back last week and beat Vandy. Missouri's better than Vandy, but not by that much. LSU beat them by 34. I think they beat Missouri by 21+. This is a get-right game again for LSU. You do not have a pick on that one, right?
No, but I would agree with you
okay.
about LSU. And certainly in a teaser, I like LSU down to 6.5.
Yeah, it feels that way for sure. Missouri offensively has got a lot of issues. Tennessee, Georgia. So we talked about this briefly before. This is a 3:30 CBS kick. Georgia's favored by 12.5. Defensively, we know what Georgia's about. Offensively, the Stetson Bennett era gets one more week. He may hold off JT Daniels for that job. I mean, the way it feels as if Daniels, I mean, he was cleared last week. I don't really know how they plan to handle that moving forward, but Bennett is doing everything they need him to do and
playing great.
I think the question for them becomes, is he enough to beat Alabama when they're probably not going to just be able to ground and pound their way to a win like they did against Auburn? But Tennessee,
sure.
as we mentioned before, here are their games last year against elite competition. 31-point loss to Florida, 29-point loss to Georgia, 22-point loss to Alabama. Jarrett Garantano in those games was 18 of 38, 176 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. I mean, he's averaging 60 passing yards a game, not even 60 passing yards a game in those three games. I mean, he just was completely
crazy.
Ineffective against great defenses. I don't think Tennessee scores much in this game. Their offensive line is really good, and maybe Tennessee
yep.
can try to move it on Georgia a little bit on the ground, but I just don't see a world in where Tennessee tops 14 in this game, and I think Georgia's got enough to where they get to 28. I'm going to take the Dogs, 31-10 kind of deal. I think Georgia's really, really good, and I think Tennessee is getting a little too much credit for a win streak that's kind of hollow. So I think Georgia still wins comfortably here.
I like Georgia there as well. And again, broken record here. Love the tease down to 5.5. That's a good teaser number, getting a dog like that under 6 points.
Other game in the SEC, Alabama and Ole Miss. I said this a minute ago, so I'll be quick. I think Saban runs it up. I think Saban pounds Lane Kiffin into the ground if he can. He is so annoyed with Lane Kiffin and all of his BS and Lane knows what he's doing. I mean, Lane is a genius.
Oh, yeah.
He is doing everything he can to get under Nick Saban's skin, and I think it's working. Now, the problem is going to backfire on Saturday because I don't think Alabama lets up. I think Saban pours it on. Saban will dial it back against the very worst teams that he plays. But this is not
right.
going to be one of those times. I think that they go full throttle on Ole Miss. And I think Ole Miss might end up scoring some points. I do think the Ole Miss offense is legitimately pretty good. Matt Corral is a talented
yep.
quarterback. But I would love the over. What is the total in this game? I actually don't have it in front of me now. I'm trying to find it. Because I wouldn't mind the over if this thing's anything. God, if the over-under is below 65, I think I would take it. But I definitely like Alabama minus the -7. The over-under, okay, that's about right. The over-under is 70. So I'll stay away from it, but I could see Alabama
yeah.
winning this thing like 59-21, 59-24 in that range, which
it
would be over. But I think Alabama really does send a message this week. But that's what I've got. What do you have? What's the next game on the docket that you've got?
Yeah, I really like Louisville -5 at Georgia Tech.
Me too.
People have jumped off of Louisville. The rise and fall of Louisville has been dramatic this year, but another good bounce back spot for them here. I like Louisville -5, and I really like them +2 in a teaser. If you're gonna bet them 5, might as well bet them +2.
Georgia Tech is terrible, and
yep.
so is Florida State, and I think it's another case where most people who have seen Georgia Tech saw them beat Florida State and might not realize just how bad Florida State is. And most people who've seen Louisville saw them lose pretty handily to Miami when Louisville's probably not quite that bad. So they've got their own issues, but they're not going to lose this game. So I love them in a teaser, and -5. I'm comfortable laying that number against the Jackets. No home field advantage there. I'm good with that. NC State, Virginia. This line stinks. I don't get this. Virginia is favored by 8 over NC State, coming off of a road win. I mean, a road win for whatever that's worth, but a win against Pitt. Pitt's better than I just downplayed Pitt earlier in the podcast. Pitt's better than Virginia, and or at least comparable. And you got Virginia
yeah.
now laying 8 points, noon kick, Scott Stadium. NC State's offense good. Run the ball well. Leary was excellent last week. Leary's been excellent since he took over midway through that game in Blacksburg 2 weeks ago. I'm taking NC State. I don't understand what on earth Vegas sees that we don't. But I'm taking NC State plus eight.
I'm shocked that this line is above like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I could see Virginia. I could see some metrics saying Virginia is a couple points better and maybe add in a couple points for home field. But again, not really going to matter. Eight is just so many. So I would be with you there. I love them. Plus 15 in this. They're for sure a leg of I aim to tease here.
Yeah. Maybe Virginia will make a believer out of me, but color me skeptical. I think Virginia, some of that success last week was a little bit of fool's gold. Clemson just was so bored. And probably a little look ahead action there with knowing Miami's coming up the next week. I don't know that Clemson wanted to tip their hand at all. I'm not buying into the fact that Virginia put up 20-plus points in that Clemson defense. I think that this is a game. I think NC State might win, and I definitely like them plus 8. So we got Pitt at Boston College. This is our last game here. 4 p.m. The classic, the 4 p.m. ACC Network game has absolutely replaced the noon Jefferson Pilot game.
Yeah.
It is the least sexy game of the week for the ACC every single week now. Pitt at BC. Chestnut Hill up in Boston early October. Going to be a chilly game. Boston College looks spicy. I mean, they are way more competitive than I thought they would be. Credit to Jeff Hafley. They're a two-point conversion attempt away from tying it up against Carolina last week. That was returned the other way, and Carolina got the 2-1 by 4. But Pitt, disappointing loss. They're favored by 6 here. This feels like a game where we could get caught trying to buy into a little bit of momentum. Maybe Pitt, you know, if the results are closer to what we thought they'd be last week, Pitt's probably favored by closer to 10, maybe 11 or 12. So could be some value on Pitt, but I'm going to take BC. I like the way they're playing. I like Djurkovic on offense. And I don't think Pitt's offense, again, like I said, Pitt doesn't seem like the type of team that's going to blow people away. So I could see BC. Maybe this is a backdoor cover too, right? I mean, maybe Pitt's up
definitely could
30 to 17 with 2 minutes to go, and BC scores to make it 30 to 24 and, you know, cover, push, whatever. I'll take BC plus 6.
That's my inclination as well. Here would be the case for Pitt quickly. You can see a world where, say, NC State does not, in fact, come down and score. Pitt wins. We don't really care what the margin is there. We just saw that Pitt escaped against NC State. North Carolina was up 8 and had the ball either in or just outside the red zone, first down, Boston College territory, with a couple minutes left in the game. There's an alternate scenario. They get a penalty or two, knocked them to the edge of the field goal range, and kicker just barely missed a long field goal that would have put them up 11. Boston College goes down and scores. There's a world where Carolina, in fact, punches in a touchdown there. They cover. They win by 15. And this looks like a steal of a number for Pitt.
Yep.
So keep that in mind. Yeah. Both of those things could happen. That said, Phil Djurkovic looked like a young Ben Roethlisberger against North Carolina.
He was good.
So playing against Pitt, I wish it were actually at Heinz Field because I could make a lot of jokes there. I don't hate Boston College plus 6. I really like them plus 13 though in a tease because they will be competitive, I think, against basically everybody they play this year because they're tough. They got, again, a really solid, tough quarterback. They play good defense. I like BC plus 13 in a tease.
Well, if you want to make money, listen to Ross, because you, my friend, are 9-1 so far this year against the spread, not even your teaser picks. You're 9-1 against the number. So at some point you're going to learn to stop betting teasers and just actually bet these games against the spread, because you'd be making a lot of money right now.
I'd be a rich man right now.
But we'll stick with some of the teasers. I'm 7-7-1. I'm just right in the middle. I get
you're just having fun.
I know. I'm the epitome of just the I'm just out here to have a good time. And
you
know what? If you're not losing, you're winning. So I will take 7-7-1, and we'll go home happy. No worse for the wear. But quick recap, you like Virginia Tech plus 12 in the tees. You like LSU, 6.5, -6.5 against Mizzou. You've got Georgia teasing them to 5.5. You've got Louisville teasing them to +2. You've got NC State +15 and BC +13 in your teasers. For me, I've got LSU -13.5, Georgia -12.5, Alabama -23, Louisville -5. I got a lot of favorites. NC State +8 and BC +6. So we'll see how this weekend goes. Ross, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be a fully loaded top to bottom.
It's going to be fun.
Huge weekend. It's a big weekend in the ACC. Maybe the most important weekend in ACC football in 4 or 5 years. So I'm looking forward to that. And we even get some great SEC battles. And maybe we'll see. I'm sure we'll see an upset or two at some point. We didn't even talk Texas-Oklahoma. That's how great this weekend is. I'm sorry. When you lose to Iowa State and TCU, you're off the College Football Country podcast. There's nothing we can do about it. Those are the rules.
Fair. No, that's not on us.
Yeah. That's on you, Tom Herman, Lincoln Riley. All right. Well, that's it for us. Great stuff as always, Ross. We'll see how it goes this weekend. And no more vacations. We're back next week for a couple pods. So I'm looking forward to it.
We're back in a big way, baby. I will see you guys after my dirt nap at 4 p.m. on Saturday for the rest of the game.
Just pop a couple Quaaludes. You'll be good to go.
That's it.
All right. See ya.
All right. See ya.